Accession number 10767, row 3.
Mr. Joe Fitzpatrick, reel 3. What sort of washing or toilet facilities did you have? Were they attached to the hut?
Well, the toilets the road led through the one side of the hut, a kind of a main, not a main road, but a military road, and the area was very picturesque, and at the other side of the road was the Italian latrines. Well, of a night time, they used to have a kind of a tub, really, outside the door, middle door, and there was a door at each end and a middle door. And on the back side, they used to put this here tub out for your watering purposes. And if you rather late, it was overflowing. But it made no difference if you just put a drop more to it. And whoever was detailed to carry it up to the latrines, they got a little bit splashed. I remember one day, one chap, he'd been sick, and when he woke up, his false teeth was gone in the tub, so he had to scrape them out. And then, round at the bottom of the huts, the backside there, was showers, hot showers, hot and cold showers. But they had a man on the job, and you had a certain day and a certain time to go for it. Eh? So they were pretty good, really.
What about the ordinary latrines? What pattern were they?
Oh, well, they were kind of big tubs, you know. And then the man, the what's name, would come along and tip them in, same as they used to do with the old middens. They weren't watered toilets. Oh, no.
So whether the sort you'd sit on a pole-like arrangement, or
what?
Was it this talk where you'd sit on a pole-type arrangement, or what?
Well, it was a cut-in, you know, you see. Just a kind of a section cut-in for a seat. Oh, yes.
What about ordinary washing, I mean, besides the showers?
If you wanted to do your shirt or anything like that, you'd wash it and the next morning it'd be dry to put on.
So you did your own laundry?
You did your own laundry.
And just washing hands and face, you use the wash basins?
Yes. Yeah, you'd have a bowl, you know, and fill it with water and clean your teeth and then have a swill with it. Oh, yes.
Who was responsible for keeping the hut clean and tidy?
Well, you were. You were, I mean to say. Every so often, the orderly officer used to come round with a sergeant, stand to your cots, and you'd lay all your equipment out, your full pack and nicely cleaned up, and your utensils, open razor, cutthroat open razor, and your lather brush. And I'll be there. And sometimes if a fella in a hut, Expert 1, was short, while the officer was in the next one, they'd run up with what he was short of. See? Otherwise he would get put on the peg. See?
Camaraderie.
Confide camp.
Oh, sorry,
CC, come find to come.
Would you... did you have any special way of laying
out your feet? Sometimes the old doctor would have a walk round and you'd be stood there and lift your shirt up and walk along. Anything wrong at all, some detective, and off to hospital they had to go.
Was that VD checks?
What?
Was that checking for VD?
Oh, yes.
Were there any cases of that?
Oh, yes. One or two. Yes. Not watching where they were going.
When you did have these checks, was there any special layout you had to put your kit in?
No, you didn't put them on your bed.
Just anyhow?
No, you played your room on your bed, laid out, and you'd walk along and check. And that. Oh, yes.
What about the food? What was that like, if you could run through?
Well, the food was very good indeed. The cookhouse. There's one thing I'd like to mention while I'm on the cooks. I think that anybody that did anything like that, cooking and all that sort of stuff, I think they all deserve a special medal. Because when we went to France, and the company cook was in a little bit of a shelter, and he used charcoal and that, and his eyes were red raw, and he burnt all over. I said they deserve a special medal for the hardship that they suffered in supplying you with a little bit of bacon or...
I'll come back to the front line stuff, but what did you get in England at Crowborough? What would your breakfast be?
Oh, we used to get a little bit of egg and bacon now and again. And if you wanted a bit of porridge, you got a bit of porridge.
And where was it served?
I'll tell you this, that it was a tin plate and your cup wasn't a cup at all. It was a workhouse bowl. A workhouse bowl. And whoever was on that fatigue could clean that up, they used to stack them up, the bowls. Oh, yes, a little bit antique, but they were enjoyable.
And where were you served up with your breakfast? Where was?
Oh, a special hut.
By the cookhouse, was it?
Well, just not far away.
So that would be breakfast. What about lunch when you had it, or dinner? What would you have then?
Oh, well, if you were out... If you were out at a route march out for the day, well, you would have to eat some of your iron rations.
What about a more normal day when you were in camp?
We'd get a good meal, a real good... what surprised me, you know, they'd have a blue fit if it was done today, but up by the latrines there was kind of a swill place, you see, that they used to throw all the food stuff there, and there was carcasses of beef, of cow beef, you know, and lambs piled there that had gone bad. And the blue bottles were busy.
So what would you get for lunch? Can you remember? What sort of food?
Well, sometimes we had a bit of Yorkshire pudding and potatoes and a bit of beef. Oh, the grub was good.
And was there
but the funny thing about it, you know, when you were that age, you know, and you'd had a real good dinner or a fair tea, chiefly bread jam, you know, but that. But you were if you had time and a bob or two in your pocket, you went to the YMCA or the Salvation Army Hut, which was at the side of a little wood, which was used by more or less of the brigade.
And what would you get there?
Well, you get a mug of tea and a sandwich or a bun, Ettles cake or whatever it was, you see, and you could get cigarettes and whatnot there, and notepaper to write home, see, all supplied, and a pillar box to put it in. Oh, yes, they were very good indeed.
What about your actual tea? What would the army supply for tea?
Well, it's hard to say now. I couldn't really say definitely. But my favourite food used to be bread jam with a bit of cheese in between.
And would the army give that? Or?
Oh, yes, you get that, I don't know. Yes. Oh, you didn't have a menu, you know. You had to take what was what.
How did you settle down to the sort of army lifestyle? Did the lack of privacy and the discipline affect you at all?
No. No, you didn't give it a second thought.
Why do you think that was?
Well, you didn't know what was next, did you? You didn't know what was next. Day came and day went, and you'd perhaps... And let me point out this to you, that when we went to Crowborough, we had Japanese belt and bayonets and rifles, and it was leather equipment. It was Japanese, because of a shortage of webbing. Till eventually, after a few months, we got fixed up with the webbing. Oh yes, and even we fired a course or two.
I'll come back to that. Let me take you through the training then that you got at Crowborough, if you can remember it. Did you carry on working on your drill while you were there?
Oh yes. Well, I mean, say, it come naturally, didn't it? You were doing this sort of thing and whatnot. We used to go at Crowborough. We used to go on a place called King Standing. And it was a kind of a plateau about a couple of miles away. And there used to be a brigade major, and his name was Major Black. He used to be sat on his horse, and he used to muck us about, change of position, echelon here and echelon there and whatnot. And then, but that was all crimey stuff. See?
Did you realise that at the time?
I did myself, personally. I did. I liked the army then, but there's no need for soldiers today.
So you carried on with your drill. What about this PT? You said you had something else to say about that. Was that now?
What was that?
The PT, the physical training.
Oh, as soon as you woke up in the morning, you know, we were issued with not carpet slippers, but canvas slippers. And they used to, come on, rest parade. And that was more or less before you'd had a wash. And you'd be out on the open, up, down, and jumping and all sorts of stuff, you know, with a physical culture fella.
Did it improve your physique, you think? Did it make you stronger? And
it made you healthier. It woke you up. Oh, definitely. Definitely. I never grumbled about grouse parade.
What about rifle training? When did you get you say you had a Japanese rifle.
Yes.
When did you get your first training with it? Would that be at Crowborough, wouldn't it?
Yes, yes. Well, you went through. It was very much the size of the Longley Enfield. But the difference was that the bolt was covered with a tin. See? A tin covering. But you could work the bolt just without disturbing the tin. That was to keep it clean and from getting wet or mud or anything. And the captain said to me, they always called me Fitz, "Hey Fitz, in theory, your musket is very, very good. How is it that you're a bad shot?" "Oh," I said, "I don't know what that is." I said, "I've got a wart on this finger." And a big wart.
Your forefinger?
Yes, my pressure finger. If you don't pull it, you press it. See? And I said, every time I take pressure, I said, it's premature. Oh, he said, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" I said, "Well, I'm going to..." He had to laugh. "I'm going to open it out, and it'll be in four sections." I said, "And I'll get a dandelion root sap and keep on doing it until it got it soft." I said, "Then I'd pull one quarter out." And after 2 days, I'd still keep dabbing it with the root. So then I'd pull another one out. I said, "And after about 10 days, I said, I'd got it all out. Root and all." See? So, in a road, shortly afterwards, we went firing. And the first time I passed him, he said, "Oh, come here." His name was Captain Maxwell. I think he'd come from Tasmania. But he died, I should think he died. I was up that his direction one day with the dog at Borden outside Altrincham. And when I went, the daughter said, "Oh, he's in the greenhouse." And I'd never seen such a change in a fella. He was in the Second War, in the signals.
But what did he say on the
he finished up when he got captured, he was colonel. Got to be the colonel of the 2nd 5th Battalion, and he was captured on March the 21st. And I saw a big change of him, so I never saw him again.
But you were saying, when he met you, about the wart.
Oh, he said, he said, you could shoot now. I said, yes, sir. He said, you're very good, very good.
So it worked. How did you know about the dandelion?
The gypsies warning. The gypsies told me.
And it actually worked, did it?
Of course it does. A lot of things, you know, they're a bit old-fashioned, but they're there.
With your rifle shooting, you said you were good in theory. What was the theory? Can you tell me?
Well, the theory was, you see, that when you'd have your rifle on a stand, and the instructor would have... He'd make sure that there were no cartridges in the... What's there? And he'd have a little disc with a hole in. And as you two came, he's got your aim on there. See? You got me? And it used to be that there was a V, you see, and at the end of that V was a spike like that. Well, you got that like that, dead on your target, and pressed, you wouldn't miss it, at 6 o'clock aim. See?
What was 6
That's
o'clock
aim? That's low for the velocity, you see.
What was 6 o'clock aim, though? Could you just explain? A lot of people won't know.
Well, 6 o'clock aim is the lowest part of the target. Right?
Because the velocity would take it high, you
the
mean?
Bullseye, you'd fire for the bottom of it. So that when it got there, it'd be down in the middle. You'd have to alter your range to 200, 250, 300.
Now, your rifle would be on...
And that was slid up and down, you see, for whatever range was on. And then you'd take him 6 o'clock. Now, later on, they had the periscopic sights.
I'll come back to them. Did you get them at Crowborough or only out in France?
Not periscopic. And we didn't have them in France. Only snipers.
Now, this way they checked your aiming was... they had a disc, and so they looked through the disc, and you aimed at the disc. Is that right?
You two aim at the disc.
And there was a hole in it that he could
see. There's a hole in it, you see, so you could see whether you were lined upright. See?
And were you...
And then again, you see, you'd learn the spring on your ammunition. What's the name? And your bolts and all this, you know, and you take it to pieces, and you've got your striker and all that, which is worked by a spring and all that, you know. And it
so you'd know how to strip the gun down?
Oh, easy.
Did you practice quick firing at all, you know?
Oh, yes, rapid fire. Oh, yes.
Did you find that easy?
Well, yes.
What rate would you go at, do you think?
Well, I could fire... I could fire five rounds. No, I'm not bullshitting when I say this. I could fire five rounds within 40 seconds. I could. And I did do. When I was in the Home Guard.
Now that... you were you able to do that while you were at Crowborough, though?
Not really. Not.
What speed would you be going while you were training?
Eh? We were never asked to go a rapid fire, you see, unless you were only pretending.
So you just pretend to rapid fire.
That's
then.
Right. Yeah.
Now, so you were quite good at the aiming at the disc, but when you actually went on a firing, at first you were no good until you got rid of this wart.
That's right.
Did you find the kick of the rifle a problem at all?
No. No, if you hold a rifle correctly, shoulder, in the hollow of your shoulder, and you held it tight, you don't notice a kick. You just get a kick back, but you wouldn't notice it. But mind you this, by the time you got a kick back, your bullet was in. See? Your bullet was in the target. So no trouble at all. I used to love it.
What was the attitude of the instructors when they were rifle training? Were they sympathetic or were they...
It didn't make any difference. They had a chart there with your name on, and they gave the report. And then the captain would check up.
And what would be on the chart?
They'd put either poor or excellent or very good, see.
If you weren't doing too well, would they actually try and help you, or were they...
Oh, definitely. Yes. Oh, yes.
And what was their attitude like?
Oh, they're gentlemen. Oh, yes, very good. Oh, there's no bullying in our lot. I mean to say, some of these sergeants and some of these woo, 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 woo. Well, the dogs, the bark is worse than the bite.
What about actually looking after your rifle? Were you taught that, rifle maintenance?
Well, we used to be called your bond hook.
Your what?
Your bond hook. B-O-N-D, bond hook. And you never left it by out of your hand.
And what was it?
Well, it was your pal. Nobody must touch that rifle, or you.
And how did you keep it clean?
Very, very easily. Just at the base, in the butt of the rifle, at the base, there's a little trap door. And in the trap door was a length of cord with a weight on, like a cigarette lead weight. And that used to be dropped in, and there was at the end of the cord was a slit, and you had a bit of 4x2 flannel, and you'd put oil on that, and then you'd pull it through several times, and then you'd look through it, and it'd shine like a new pin. And sometimes the officer that was inspecting a guard on it, he'd grab for you what's there. Well, you'd put it straight to him, you see, and we used to always wet your thumb ready, see. Then you put your thumb there at the end of your bolt, and you open it, and you get a lovely reflection. You'd look, this slingy back. All sorts of little tricks. Yeah. Cheers. Later, we got provided with weapon equipment. And that felt a lot more comfortable. And not as sloppy, because if you had the Japanese, it used to sag.
Round your stomach, at the front.
It used to sag the ammunition. But with the weapon, everything was more compact.
Was it easier to maintain?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You only need your khaki blanket so every so often. If you thought it wasn't doing up, you just got a bit of khaki blanket on. And next day it'd be all right, and then you clean the brass, little bits of brass that was round it. And I've never heard anybody ask the question, when you got a trenching tool, you fasten it up two hooks at the back of you, and you could sit on it. See? It's in a leather case. And then on the bayonet, there was two loops for the handle of your trenching tool with that in there. And I've never heard people ever mention it. I don't know why. But it was very, very compact and very, very clever.
What about the actual... When you went on a range to do your shooting, what was the procedure when you were actually firing the rifle at a test or on a range?
Well, sometimes you used to be detailed, you see, to work in the butts.
What was that procedure? What did you do in the...
That's world? Where the targets are, you see. And they would have a chart made, you see, who fired second and third, you know. And somebody would know who was firing second and third. And then your name would be put on it, you see, and checked up. And also you had a disc that... a round black disc, and it pointed to where you were aiming, you see, either a little to the right or the left, or target. See?
How would you put that where the shot went?
You would fire one shot, you see, and then when everybody was there, you got on the blower, right, you see, the short communication, and then you fired again. Well, you knew where you were with your first, so you correct, so you finished firing, rectify your aim, you see, and right above your uncle. You should be in, which I will describe to you later on about my firing.
Not at Crowborough, then?
No.
Right, oh, that's
no, it's after the war.
Okay, right, that's fine. What about bayonet fighting? Did you get any bayonet fighting training at Crowborough?
Yes. Oh, everybody got... they had straw, you know, and a spot on it, you know, where you got to stick your rifle into them and in, out, and whatnot, and then hit them with the butt of the rifle and all that, which was a load of rubbish to me.
Then, was it?
And after, because if you ever got into such a pickle that it was either him or you, you'd do it, you see. But these people at the... they'd got a real damn good job, that I'm talking about in France, like, you know. Where they went for a refresher course, you know. A refresher course.
I'll come back to the Etarp. Yeah. What about your bayonet instructors in England? What were they like?
Well, they're very good. In fact, they belonged to the battalion. You see, you had musketry instructors that they'd passed out and had got the cross rifles on the sleeve.
And the actual bayonet instructors, what were they like?
They're the same thing, physical culture and bayonet training and marksmanship.
And they had the straw. They used the... what methods did they use to teach you bayonet in England?
Well, they used to say, right, carry a rifle at the port, see, advance, and then charge. In, out, bang. And run through, you see, and then if you weren't doing it right, come back, do it again, see.
And this was against these things, was
yes,
it?
Yes, swinging straws, bags, yeah.
And did you take to it, or you?
No, I thought it was a waste of time.
Even then, in Crowborough?
Even then, yes.
Was there much emphasis put on bayonet fighting, or was it just another small part of the
drill? Another small part of the drill. It was only just to fill the gap, I think. Because if you're confronted with anybody, say, like getting mugged or anything like that today, well, the first in is first out, isn't it? See?
What about other weapons? Did you get any training in any of the machine guns at the time?
No, not then. I didn't.
What about...
I got that later.
What about hand grenades? They were just coming in.
Oh, yes.
Did you get them at Crowborough?
Yes. They had a bayonet fighter that went on in front. They had a bomber and a couple of carriers. And a man at the back in the rear, and he used to walk along this trench, and then he used to stop, and then he used to throw the grenade, you see, which wasn't detonated, you see. And some of these big fellas, you know, could throw it pretty good distance.
Which grenade was it at this time?
Mills's.
They'd come out by then.
Oh, yes. They're very... The Mills' bomb.
Did you get a chance to throw it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, along the turn, you know, and walk along the trench and then throw it.
But it wasn't a live one?
Oh, no. Not there.
How far could you throw it, do you reckon?
Oh, well, I mean, say 20 yards and no more.
They were quite heavy, weren't they?
They were just under 2 pounds. And they were very handy, they were very comfortable. Mind you, they improved a little bit on them. The Mills' bomb, before that, I was on a course when I was a Lance Corporal at Ingatestone in Kent. And we did the Mills' bomb, and there was about half a dozen other bombs, rifle bombs, and... the Mills' bomb was a rifle bomb and all, you know. You could fire it by rifle, which I'll describe to you later.
That's later in the war, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
We'll come back...
No, this is while I'm in England.
In 1915?
Yes, in England. I was on a course a week or 10 days at Ingatestone on bombing. And
do you remember when that was?
Eh?
Do you remember what month it was?
Not exactly. Be a bit on the winter side.
So towards the end of the course, yes. Yeah. Approaching 16.
Yeah.
And what do you remember about that course then? Because that's quite interesting.
There was a 16, 17, 18 and a 19, I think. They were more thinner and ringed, you know. Like this, you see, only ringed.
Mm-hmm.
See?